Hello everyone, and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present, and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, the founder of Looking for Group, and today we are diving into the framework of esports organizations, how the industry is starting to kind of experiment with other ideas to set those up from being player owned to being franchised, etc., etc. But before I introduce our guests, I just wanted to say thank you for the feedback from the last episode with Nicole Pike from Nielsen. That really blew up online, and all the kind tweets and messages that we've been getting have been super awesome. So I just want to say welcome to listeners new and old. For this episode, episode 11 of the Roundtable, we are joined by Frederick Bieskov, the CEO of Astralis, and Jordi Roig, the Chief Commercial Officer for Refresh. The organizational setup between Refresh and Astralis is truly unique in the industry. And I feel like with all of the change that is undergoing at the moment for 2018, it's going to be really interesting to see how Astralis, who have risen so quickly to the top of the CSGO scene, will be looking to stay relevant as the industry continues to move forward as a non-franchised organization. Guys, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us, Joe.
Awesome. So before we get stuck into the detail of the ideas behind why Astralis has been positioned the way that it has, let's just hear a little bit more about your stories, your journey to where you are now, and your history as gamers in your personal life.
Sure, well, I can give it a go. I mean, I started back in 1999 when Counter-Strike came out, so a bit more than 18 years ago now. Started out as a gamer myself. I played Counter-Strike for around 6 years. Then I, you know, came to the conclusion that I sucked too much to be a pro. So, I mean, but at that point, I've been in the community for so long and attended a lot of LAN events, and I couldn't let go of it. So instead of playing, I started volunteering within the community. And I did that besides my studio and real job, as we would call it back then. Now working as the CEO of Astralis and working together with Jordi in regards to Blast Pro Series and all the exciting stuff Refresh has going on, and especially helped take Astralis to the next level as well in that regard.
Awesome. And Jordi, how was the sale of esports? You know, how did that process go? What really made you excited?
So I have a background in international marketing. I've worked with events and pro sports and entertainment, opera, rock festivals, commercializing that. I met Frederick the summer of 16, yeah, and we had good talks. And I recognized some of the things in esport as a very young industry, but with a huge potential because the product was so entertaining. But also I could see that there could be a role for people like me without a gaming background to bring some of the competences and experiences that has been required or acquired through life in entertainment, media, sponsor sales that Frederick and his partner Jakob, due to the youth, didn't have yet. There was really no doubt for me that this was truly exciting field with a lot of great potential, but also a lot of things where I could make my knowledge and my experience valuable.
Okay, awesome.
Make a difference in regards to how, you know, the whole esports community has been run, and also in that regard, in regards to events especially, but we come back to that later, I guess, in regards to Blast Pro Series as well.
Sure. Yeah, it's been very interesting for me from a executive search perspective, just seeing how a lot of organizations have been set up, you know, what their priorities are when they're making key hires, be it within business development or commercial partnerships. You know, where are endemic esports teams looking to bring in the expertise from outside of the space? And it's pretty much exclusively from anything to do with events production and everything on the commercial side as well. So seeing these kind of partnerships played out obviously makes a lot of sense, you know, when you're looking to help esports teams and the industry as a whole to reach its potential in the future. Let's mine down into Astralis and Refresh's symbiotic relationship. How would you describe Refresh and the relationship that all of these teams actually have together? Because they compete in slightly different tiers of the CSGO scene, right?
We have a lot of the content production, the sponsorship sales, accounting, legal help, all that. We put that in the Refresh umbrella, which Astralis benefits from. So, and what is also the performance model, the investigation, how to train, how to live, how to diet, how to rest as an esport athlete. Developing that model also is very heavy for one team, five players to carry. So that's why we kind of built the umbrella, which the refreshes, and we have some central resources that every property digs into and takes advantage of.
The whole philosophy behind Astralis and why it makes perfect sense for us to be a part of Refresh as well is, you know, we wanted to make, you know, what we call a, you could say, a Cloud9 2.0 or Envios 2.0 or whatever you want to call it, a new form of organization within esports and especially Counter-Strike, as that's our field of expertise right now. And we want to make sure, absolutely sure, that what we do with the players before, you know, heading into another game or another esports title and hiring a new team there, that what we do and how these players, these professional athletes actually train, it all makes sense in the end. And that's where the Refresh model and hiring people outside of esports with their knowledge and how to run a regular sports team, and use and combine the knowledge of the two different environments to actually build something that, you know, can help esports in the right direction in the long run.
Sure. And I guess that kind of leads quite nicely on to a question about the local market. How would you define the Danish esports scene at the moment? Because we're seeing, like, the pro player talent is absolutely out of this world, but it just seems like Scandinavia is slightly being left behind. Feel free to say that I'm completely wrong, but it seems like a lot of the movement is going east and west, and Europe is slightly behind the curve.
Yeah, definitely. Is and you can say Sweden was and if we go back to 1.6, the Counter-Strike version of that was the biggest nation in the world in that regard, and then we had one Danish team leading the way, but it was mainly, you know, Southern Korea and US that, you know, were the front runners, and in recent year it's sort of changed that Europe in general has made a you know, a mark on how, you know, teams operate and also the level of, you know, play they can deliver in tournaments. It's besides SK, if we go the Counter-Strike way, it's only Europe teams that win the tournaments, the big Taiwan tournaments. And I think that's due to the whole Europe esports scene is, you know, evolving, because it's been far behind. Especially if we look into, you know, US and gaming houses and how they have developed into League of Legends and other esports titles. It's something that's coming now. We are not using gaming houses per se in Europe. Astralis, we have an office space together with Refresh, as one of the other teams Refresh has, where we actually have, you know, a professional, you know, practice environment, which hasn't been able to, you know, to have before. And that's a part of the performance model. And I think several organizations is going in the right direction in that regard. And that is why, you know, Europe and Scandinavia is slowly moving forward. I mean, we have in Denmark, we have the most professional players in any country, if you take into consideration how many people actually live in the country. So, and that's not just Counter-Strike, that's League of Legends and other titles as well. We're doing quite good.
It must be something in the water, right? It's quite interesting. They touch on the gaming house perspective, because if you look at, say, what Immortals are looking to put together with bringing all of their teams onto one site, there's other organizations that are looking to do that too. The separation between you know, work and life is important for anyone, really, just to be able to get like a mental break and have some space just to decompress, and then go back at what they're passionate about the next day. I can imagine that it would be suffocating.
I love my job, but I wouldn't live with all my colleagues all the time. I wouldn't live with them in the evening again. I mean, I wanted to see my girlfriend and family and friends, and that's what we're doing as well with our teams, that they get, you know, time off to be themselves and be with friends and family when they're not out traveling. I mean, of course, they're out traveling 150 to 200 days a year. So when they are back home, it's really important that they actually have some time off and don't have to, you know, live in the same house and, you know, go beside each other each day, because I don't think that would be a benefit from our point of view.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, this might be quite unrealistic, but it seems like a lot of the CSGO players that have been around since 1.6, the bright lights don't seem to distract them as much, because there is a much stronger competitive narrative to what they've been doing for the last, say, 10 or 15 years. Whereas you look at some other esports that might necessarily be younger or, I don't know, not be able to look after themselves is long and short of it. And like, if you look at Virtus Pro, I mean, that team has stayed together for years, has some quite old and seasoned players, but they seem to be able to actually look after themselves without having the need for these gaming houses that we see pretty consistently, like across
it's
the League of Legends.
It's different cultures as well, yeah, in regards to what game you play.
Sure.
I mean, a game like League of Legends or something like that, it makes more sense to live together, as the seasons are 3 months. Mm. You have a new season and then you play for Worlds. Whereas in Counter-Strike, you have a year-to-year season and you travel the world to so many different places.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It's just the same city and the same studio you attend every time.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Let's step into an area that the podcast has focused on a lot over the last few weeks, which is the navigating the gap between brands and esports. We've had executive on from WMEIMG representing the non-endemic side. We've had James Grunke on, who used to be the global head of NVIDIA, on to discuss the endemic perspective, but we haven't spoken to any teams on the podcast yet about what they look for in a brand, be it for a long-term or short-term a partnership. Obviously, with you guys doing so well in game, it brings a lot more options to the table. But how would you describe the kind of unique approach to Astralis and Refresh activating with these brands?
So just to take a step backwards, what is it that we actually, what is the product that we are trying to sell?
Yeah.
And we've been talking a lot to our players and internally in Refresh, the people working here, about who are the most important people in the industry. And there's been a lot of different opinions in that. But I think now we are to terms that the far most important people in this industry is the audience. It's not the players, it's not the staff, but it is the audience. And it's quite a simple thing. The amount of audience and the engagement of the audience are the metrics that releases funds from brands, because brands pay to get the acquisition power from audience. That's kind of a boring marketing way of looking at it, but that is actually what everything is about. So we see esport as a great entertainment product. We see the audience as heavily engaged in what they look at. But one of the reasons that we chose Counter-Strike as an entry point is that we see Counter-Strike as the easiest title to bring in new audience. We actually think that Counter-Strike can compete with other competitive entertainment products such as basketball, football, of the attention of a broader sport fan audience. We call it sport fans because it's consumers that are used to consume competitive entertainment.
Sure.
And actually, that is the real mission statement from Refresh, is to get the mainstream acceptance of esport. Not because we are on a mission, a religious mission, but because we think that the product esport and specifically Counter-Strike can deliver on that. It's highly intensive. It's the most adrenaline boosting entertainment product out there. So this is what we want to do, is want to create the best possible products that draws in the largest numbers of audience and creates the most engaging audience. And then we use that bridge to make audience engage in brands. We've seen it with the things that we've done for Microsoft, Audi, bestseller by Jack and Jones. The largest fashion retailer in the world is actually bestseller, who owns the brand Jack and Jones. Mm-hmm. Is when we engage and kind of ask the brands to be true to themselves, be authentic, they can obtain that relevancy that is necessary today in today's youth media consumption to get the attention span they need to be able to tell their story. So we kind of looking at it from a very classical marketing business school perspective, the AIDA funnel, and then we try to create the products that can leverage the audience.
There's obviously one big caveat with that entire approach, is that from an education standpoint, CSGO also has some of the most, you know, abhorrent themes that non-endemics might completely shy away from completely. I've mentioned on the podcast several times that this year has all been about education, and it will continue to be so from the brand perspective, from the player side, etc., etc. But how large are the obstacles that you feel like you're having to climb over when you can say about the reach and the engagement and the passionate fans, but at the end of the day, so many of these organizations have such strong family values, you know?
To give a little story on that, when we created Astralis back in January 2016, we went a whole year without announcing a partner, and we didn't sign, you know, different non-endemics like many of the, you know, the old school organization did. The first year they existed, I mean, we took it slow and we talked with a lot of non-endemics and brands and partners, and in our talks, educating them in what is Counter-Strike, because it's true, there are a few things in Counter-Strike which can scare brands, but it's not what we sell, and it's not, again, it's not what Counter-Strike is about.
Sure.
Counter-Strike is all these few wow moments that you have during game, and it took a lot of time, you know, to express what Counter-Strike is about. But when brands understands it and they see it, and we take them out and show what Counter-Strike is all about, they get the same feeling, and the same with the audience, as you already mentioned, the younger audience. They get the whole wow feeling when they watch Counter-Strike, because it's really entertainment. So yeah, there might be a few subjects within the game that some brands isn't, you know, likely to involve themselves with. But then again, those brands will come at a later stage when they found out how much, you know, esports and Counter-Strike is growing, and that it's not about those elements, but it's actually about the entertainment perspective in the game and, you know, the title itself.
Yeah, I've seen that from the kind of content that you guys have put out when you're directly partnering with these brands as well. It seems to be focusing much more on the kind of player narrative, especially with the Microsoft piece that we saw at Leaders when I met Jordy like a few weeks back. Yeah, exactly.
You know, the younger generations, they look up to them as their idols. So it's not just about the game, it's about who are these players and what they're becoming for the audience as well. So it makes perfect sense for brands, you know, to commit to not just esports but CSGO as well in that regard.
Awesome. Cool. I'm glad that we touched on that, because it's one of the biggest points of contention that I hear with regards to Counter-Strike, and when that point comes up, it seems like it's such a shame for that to be the focus when at an actual entertainment level, it's the most transferable and one of the most engaging esports titles out there that could transcend the very passionate but hardcore community that we live in. Let's step away from the commercial side for 1 second and talk about player ownership within the Astralis brand, because one of the things that I see a lot from the pro level is that many teams have such a ridiculously high turnover of talent when it comes to changing entire rosters every single year, no consistency, and things kind of falling apart from the outside very, very quickly for very little reason. When you build an organization that has the roster built in from an ownership perspective, you obviously have to be very sure of new additions like Glaive that'll be stepping in. So what's your philosophy, and also what's the player's philosophy when it came to setting up this organization? Obviously the length of contracts in the industry have extended over the last year or so it's not just 1 year rolling. So there's lots of organizations that are trying to stagger when their talent can actually go on the market. But yeah, what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, going a few years back as well in that regard, I mean, back in 2015, I was the team's manager in TSM, you know, the big League of Legends organization. And before that, they were in Dignitas, and before that in Copenhagen Wolves. And, you know, the year before that in another, I don't even know what that was called. I mean, they each year back in the days, the team switched organization. So selling something to, you know, partners or brands and buying into, you know, a brand as Astralis is now, it's quite hard for people coming from the outside. That each year, okay, if I'm not a regular follower, then I don't, you know, really get why is Glaive playing in another team. And we sort of wanted to change that. And when we came up, you know, with different solutions for where we should be back in 2015, you know, creating our own organization was one of those. And the investor, which is now the CEO of Refresh, he came with a good point that, well, if we give the players, if they become owners of the project as well, you know, they feel, you know, more connected to the brand. And it's not about, you know, closing down the players and not making them leave. It's about making them, you know, able to see what's actually going on within an organization. I've been a part of esports for so long, and I've worked with so many different organizations. And, you know, the transparency and know, the see-through of what's really going on, why are we signing that sponsor, what are we doing with that signing session, and all this, why are we getting paid as much as we are, why are we not getting paid more, and all that. It was really hard to, you know, to see back then, and that's something we wanted to change, and that's the whole, you know, philosophy behind Astralis is transparency, and that also includes that the players are co-owners of the brand and the company. And that is a quite different approach what other organizations have done during the past.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen from the CSGO team the kind of turnover there and some of the stories from other teams about, you know, certain players going behind others' backs get paid more, and then rosters like completely falling apart, and then, you know, like all the performance goes out the window. So I think trying to keep everyone on the same page and actually everyone bought in to the culture and the ideas that you guys are putting forward is super important, and that's not just for esports as well. You know, when you're building up a company or building up an organization, or if you're looking to pivot a business in a new direction, you need to be in touch with everyone from the top to the bottom to make sure that everyone is passionate or is able to understand why this town's being taken, actually like treated like a human being.
I mean, it's normal that players will have to be replaced, but what's really not healthy for the entire scene is full teams switching organization each year, because it makes it harder for the audience to understand, and it makes it harder for the brands to invest into esports.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you know, making longer contracts, player contracts, that's one of the points. But we also thought that, you know, giving them full transparency in what's going on, you know, behind the scene was something else as well. And that's something that's been, you know, really good for us. And it all, I mean, last year, this year we haven't changed the player and we're not going to, but last year we had to change a few players. And even though all of us that created Astralis back then was, you know, good friends, this is more than just, you know, friendship. It's if we don't deliver results and that's on all accounts, then, well, you know, someone will have to be swapped out.
Sure.
But at least it's not the, you know, majority of the players, and they'll always there will always be changes on an esports team, but the difference is that it's not, you know, switching out entire brands and three or four players at the same time and all that. It's more steady now.
And I think that's needed, you know, for the last 4.5 years I've been working in the space, like you've seen so much brand turnover, and with franchising coming in other spaces, in other titles, that should stop or already slow down quite a lot. But we'll have to see for the future. One thing that I'd actually like to ask you off the back of that is the path past pro, so the landscape for esports players after they are retired from competition. Obviously, now that the business side of esports is really starting to ramp up, we're seeing less former pros stepping into business roles and more kind of looking at the streaming option. Have you had any experience with kind of having to have that hard conversation with the player, or are you already looking forward to kind of how can you keep some of your key players in the future bought into the brand and actually still staying active and actually engaged in the long term?
I mean, hopefully we don't have to swap out any players in the next years to come. But if it ends up, we have a clause in our contract as well that if they can bring something to the table in regards, you know, to the company and bring value, then why not keep them on board and use their brand and use the knowledge they have gained the many years from playing.
Sure.
I mean, like me coming from esports and been a part of it for so long, and Jordi coming from the outside, being a, you know, a part of the real world, so to say, before esports,
yeah,
you know, was recognized, then it's, I mean, it makes perfect sense for people from both sides being on part in within a company, and the same goes for the players. They obviously have to bring something to the table, because you can't just, you know, get a salary and be hired. Company, but in the long run, yes, I think and believe that the players then are just making, you know, a career for themselves with while they play. It could be streaming afterwards, which a lot of US players does these days. Mm-hmm. But I also think that they'll get so much experience from being in this environment, which esports is, that the players will have a lot to bring to the table when they retire, and not just within esports. I think they can take a lot of knowledge with them to, you know, traditional sports as well, if it was, or, you know, concerts or events in general. So definitely helping players afterwards when they're done competing. But then again, I hope we can keep the same roster for many, many years.
Sure. It's just quite interesting to see how much onus has been put on that. You know, that's great that clause is there, and it's probably indicative that you guys are a younger organization, but there are some of those that have been around for longer that have a bit more of a structured way of working with former players, like Optic do an absolutely awesome job of that. It's just something to keep an eye on, and it's also something that I don't feel like is discussed enough in the industry, so it's always interesting to hear your perspective on that.
Just a small comment, Joe. Allow me a small comment on that. For us in a Refresh, the organization that we've built has a very nice balance between experienced esport people like Frederick Biskov, Graham Pitt, Jakob Lund Christensen, people who've been in the scene for 10, 15 years. And then we complete that roster, organization roster, with people like myself that I have no gaming background, but I have background in you know, in commercial sponsorship sales. How does it work? How do we create a product that is not just because I love games, but a product that can draw in big audiences?
Sure.
Also, when we develop commercial products, we use the players, and we can see that the insight they have is very unique people like myself, you know, marketing agencies, they don't have that deep knowledge and insight into what the esport community think like. Then they have then they will never get the relevancy that is so necessary in order to create commercially viable products.
Yeah, I think it's good that you touch on that. You know, when I was mentioning about, you know, the path past Pro, I wasn't insinuating, obviously, with player owned or with such high buying, you know, there's going to be a lot of kind of bilateral flow of information and input and kind of molding ideas through using everyone who's there. It's just an interesting topic for the industry as a whole that has probably a higher burnout rate than a lot of professional sports, and there are only so many, you know, jobs as casters, or there's only so many times that someone can stream a game. You know, not everyone can be Dr. Disrespect, you know, so it's just quite interesting to see other ideas. And I think that having players that are very cognizant of their own brand, who've been in the space for a while, who really engage in the business side, you know, that's only going to give them more tools to succeed and grow in the future. So that's always great to see. So guys, we are running up against the clock here. So we just have time for one more question, which is our fun recurring segment where we try to learn a little bit more about our guests. This week, we're calling it Alt Life. So guys, if you could have any role in esports in any title, past, present, fantasy, or future, what would it be and why?
I was lucky enough to be part of the first major for the Counter-Strike Global Offensive Tournament back in December 2013 at DreamHack Winter. The head admin for that event and running that. And knowing how much, or some would say less, Valve talks with the pro and the community itself, I think a fun position could be to work within Valve to be esports coordinator, project manager, or whatever in regards to fans, organizers, and this whole topic, so we didn't get a major 3 months later than our announcement, and then 2 days later they have to play a qualifier for the major. So both from a, you know, practical point of view, but also because I think it would be a fun challenge to, you know, unite the whole scene in that regards, from, you know, audience to fans to teams and organizers. A role in there, and, you know, do some magic.
That's a smart one. I mean, it would definitely be great to have a bit more of a open channel of communication there, so that's good.
Yeah, my vision is that within not so far future, esport will have established itself as a major global entertainment product like the Formula One or the NBA, and we've been doing so good in Blast Pro Series that we have like a good handful or 10 of major events every year, and because we did so well, the organization will invite me every time to come and watch some good Counter-Strike. The VIP seats, having canapes, having a glass of bubbles, and watching great Counter-Strike.
That's not an ideal role. That's a diplomatic answer talking about your new product. I won't accept that. I want something like fantasy outside of CS:GO. I know it's your dream. I know it's your dream. That's where you want to get to. But saying that you know your dream role is to sit and be a spectator, you know, everyone who's working in the space, everyone who's listening to this podcast should be one of those already. I'm going to give you one more shot. It was a good answer.
I really mean that we are on something great, and I'd just love to develop and continuing developing Blast Pro as one of the many good formats out there, so we can, because I think we can make a breakthrough with esports. And yes, I'll just stay in the role I have. I think it's a fantastic job.
Very good. Very good. Very political. I like it. I'm going to accept it as long as you promise to save me a seat when you open the bubbles. Guys, if you've enjoyed the podcast, please do leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. It helps us to climb up the charts. Our listeners and all the feedback that we've been getting over the last few weeks is absolutely awesome. We've got one episode every week until Christmas. We're going to take a little break, and we've got some really awesome stuff in the pipeline with regards to going live and doing some other content and switching around some of the structures of the podcast. So any and all feedback on what you'd like, how amazing my voice is and how great our guests are. You know, that would be awesome. So Frederick, Jordi, thank you very much for coming on, and everyone else, we will speak to you soon.